Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Gutters, meet the gutters. Oh boy, I'm ecstatic to tell you that, guess what, everybody, another live show is officially on the books. March 26th, Saturday night, 8 p.m., Carasotis Movie Theater in Secaucus, New Jersey. Kevin Israel and I are happy to welcome back Bill Schultz and Joanne Nosuchinski for the morning show on Compound Radio. We are doing the theater and episode thing back to back. And guess what? They've chosen the 1999 classic film Office Space. Oh yeah, that's going to rank the cockles of all you Gen Xers out there. And tickets can be found at guttingthesacredcow.com. And for a promo code, type in one of our favorite phrases. That's all one word, one phrase, no spaces. I bet you can figure it out to save 15%. guttingthesacredcow.com to get tickets. And in this episode, we welcome back our pal Dan Buffa, who's going to take on an absolute beloved treasure from the early to mid-2000s, No Country for Old Men. So Dan, hit it.
Gather around.
Call me a cocksucker again and you're out of here. You're a cocksucker. You're out of here. Kevin Israel, name that film.
I feel like that's how all of our conversations start.
Before record.
Yes.
I have no idea.
Our guest today is returning friend of the show, Dan Buffa. Dan, I know you know what this quote is from.
Do it again and give it some feeling this time.
No. I don't give inflection because that's a dead giveaway if I do that. Although, actually, I can do that because some of the ones I can, some I can't. This one you can. Call me a cocksucker again and you're out of here. You're a cocksucker. You're out of here.
Bo Durham.
Yes. Come on.
Crash Davis. Say it.
Yeah, cocksucker.
Cocksucker.
Yep.
I've never seen that movie.
Israel, it is arguably his best role because he's just a ruthless minor league catcher who doesn't give a shit.
Never seen it.
I will vehemently disagree that is not his best role.
Well, maybe arguably, but there's a lot of good Kevin Costner roles.
First of all, it's not even his best sports film. I think Bull Durham is overrated.
Which one do you got? Bull Durham.
I think it's so overrated. The best baseball film is Major League. Without any arguments.
I can't, that's in my top three.
Okay.
It's in my top three.
But I tell you what, I like For Love of the Game better than I did Bull Durham.
Billy Chappell, man, you know. Have you ever just stopped in traffic before you're about ready to lose your mind and went, clear out the mechanism, clear it out. Think about Kelly Preston.
And the other one that no one saw that I did, McFarland USA, where he's a cross country coach, is great. Very, very good.
Is he going to do a hockey movie? He's just got to round out the whole thing. Draft Day. I love Draft Day. Can I say this? Isn't that one of the best usages of Jennifer Garner? She got some meat on the role. She held her own with all the guys. That's one of her best roles, and she's in a supporting role.
Yeah.
Although, I thought everybody was fine in it. It's a really rewatchable
Dennis
movie.
Dennis Leary is the offensive coordinator.
He's the head coach.
Who's the offensive coordinator of that team? Does he have a role or no?
You know who he is? He's the head coach.
The
black guy from The Arrow.
Yeah, that's it. And then you have all the scouts, and of course you have Skeletor as the GM, right?
Frank Langella, the owner. Yeah, very good. By the way, and I like that film. We all admit we like that. That ending, has to be top five. That doesn't happen. I'm sitting here watching. I'm watching it. I don't guess I didn't see it in the theater at home. I go, I'm throwing my hands and they go, oh, fucking stop it already.
Hey, and also, rest in peace, Chadwick Boseman, way before his big Black Panther breakout.
He has the best cell phone case in that movie.
Yeah.
It looks like brass knuckles with spikes on it that he holds. Whoa, I was like, where do I get that?
You guys, don't tell me.
Kevin Costner.
Don't tell me you think that Chadwick Boseman, that was his first film, because how about let's go about a little further back to the little film called 42.
42, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Played a guy called what? Jackie? Yeah. Jackie.
You know it. All right. But we're not here to talk about Jackie Robinson and 41 and all these other films that we've mentioned and Kevin Costner and how we would give him a metaphorical BJ, except for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, because that was fucking awful. As an adult, as a kid, you're like, this is cool. As an adult,
it was great.
Like, this is terrible. And then he has Waterworld, which is also. Oh, but wait, what am I thinking? The second best baseball film he did, Field of Dreams. The best baseball film he did, excuse me, is Field of Dreams, unquestionably. Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel, we're getting that sports movie jag. I better get out before I wear a groove into this floor. Here we are yet again, and Dan Buff is back. Dan, what have you been up to? Tell the fine folks where we can find you before we start this lovely podcast.
Well, a lot of the movie stuff is still at KSTK simply because I send them stuff and they put it up. They could just say, hey, you suck. Go put this up at some little website. But, you know, if it's Jewish related, because they pay, it's at STL Jewish Light. So if it's Liev Schreiber doing a Ray Donovan movie, that's going to be like up there. But for the most part, the Scream stuff, all the Marvel reviews, because Jewish people just think that's just too loud and too fun, I guess. But mostly KSTK and Jewish Life and the movie stuff. I do go on television for some weird reason. A producer put me on television on Fox 2's Studio STL. It's a lifestyle channel, at least before I come on. And then it becomes some kind of like Fast and Furious Israel infomercial, you know, where it's like me as a Mossad agent and a spinoff that nobody watches on NBC. But other than that, just writing reviews for KSTK and talking to you about movies that I think are really, really, really overrated.
You mentioned this, and I have to ask because I DVR'd it. Yeah, I'm 40. I still DVR. 45. I still DVR shit.
Yeah.
Is the Ray Donovan film any good? Because the last two seasons were dog shit.
I feel like it finally tackles the one question on the show of what exactly happened between Ray and his dad, what kicked off. Because without that, the show's nothing. These two hate each other.
Right.
And I think the guy who plays a young Mickey, who's played by Bill Heck, is just terrific. I love the movie. I watched it twice. Wow. And I'm actually going to – the wife is finally ready to kick the tires on starting with season one, when Ray was not as beaten up and as sad looking, you know?
Yeah.
You know? Back when he got out of the car and was like, oh, you're a reservoir dog. And then after seven seasons, he kind of looked like Obama after those two, you know, stints in the White House. He looked like he went from 50 to 75.
Atlas carrying the world on his shoulders while developing osteoporosis. I hear you.
Yeah.
Dan didn't come here to talk about Ray Donovan. Ha, fooled you again. He came here to talk about the 2000, we call it a classic, Kevin Israel. A lot of people like it. I'm not going to put it in classic territory yet. No Country for Old Men, the film that gave the infamous Javier Bardem haircut that none of us will ever wear. 2000. Yeah, Dan did that. 2007 budget at the time, $25 million, a box office haul of $171.6 million. Pretty good. 2022 money, $32.2 million budget, box office haul, 221.4. That is a 7x increase. Not too shabby, Kevin Israel.
Not at all.
Quotes. That's true. Coen Brothers usually make stuff on the cheap. What's their highest growth, like highest budgeted film? True Grit?
60, maybe 50 million, 60 million. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I bet.
What do you think? Damon and Bridges were probably at least, I know Damon was getting 15 to 20 at least of that.
Yeah,
like when Bruce Willis did an M. Night film like 20 years ago and took about a third of the budget or half of it.
Quotes, call it. And that's all I've got, kids. This film is not quotable one bit. Kevin Israel, any quotes out of you, sir?
I would have been. I was paired with my. Hell's bells! They even shot the dog.
Fair. Hey, Dan,
quotes from you, anything.
What did Woody Harrelson's character say? Yeah, he's pretty deadly, but I'm going to underestimate him and get shot sitting down in a chair instead. No, he didn't say that. I have no quotes.
That's a hell of a foreshadowing right there.
He's just, you know, everybody's like, this guy's a pretty bad dude. Let's just underestimate him the whole movie.
Right. Because that works. Five fun facts.
Five fun facts, 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 five fun facts.
Heath Ledger was considered for the role of Moss, but withdrew to take some time off to do copious amounts of drugs. Just kidding. Josh Brolin broke his shoulder right after being added to the cast when his motorcycle collided with a car. Someone did not play Spy Hunter as a youth.
Or follow Ben Roethlisberger's career on motorcycles, dude. That's come on, be true. Careful.
Josh didn't say a word about the injury, and thank God he didn't, because his character gets shot in the shoulder early, so he didn't have to act hurt.
That is fortuitous,
isn't it? Oh. I love that word, fortuitous. I use that often.
As do I.
The usual fake blood that is in movies has a ton of sugar, but it could not be used in this film because it would attract a ton of desert creatures. So the Coens had to order in a special blood from England where it cost, quote, around $800 a gallon.
Oh.
Fake blood costs $800 a gallon, but, if we shoot a load, it's only $50. You tell That's me. It. And yeah, we're handsome. We're handsome. And we're handsome sons of bitches, too. This is preposterous.
On. This is a little wrong business. Inequality going on here when it comes to, blood and other stuff.
Did you guys ever blow loads for a clinic when you're in college for money?
I did not, but I thought about it really hard a couple of nights.
I did too.
Almost got out the door and I turned around like, no, go.
Isn't it only like $150?
Yeah. My ex-girlfriend, she was like, what do you want to have? You want to have some kid knocking your door going, are you my daddy?
I go, Dad?
Yeah.
No, get out of here.
Instead, I sold my comic book collection. I should have just jerked off.
No.
Let's see. Decisions.
Number four, Tommy Lee Jones nailed that monologue in the final scene in just one take because he said, I've been practicing. Good for you, Tommy.
Good job.
Tommy Lee and his huge dong honked a boat's horn in the video with Pam Anderson. No, Tommy Lee Jones had top billing, but the least amount of screen time.
Yeah. That was noticeable.
He's just showing up to everything a little bit late, like a non-fortuitous movie cop. He's just like, hey guys, what happened here?
What do you got bodies. There?
Oh, what do you got there? Oh, who has fresh bagels? Come on.
Pushes
man.
A few things around with a pencil and then leaves.
Yeah. and he basically philosophizes the whole movie. He's never there.
That's so true. Well, it's funny. This also reminded me of when Schwarzenegger did Batman and Robin and then gave fucking, George Clooney is Batman, for Christ's sakes, and he's second billing. Like, how pissed must you be? Like, I know Clooney wasn't, he was on ER. He did Dust Till Dawn. I forgot. Did it come out? Yeah, it did, because Dust Till Dawn was 96.
That was like his first, that and The Peacemaker was like his first two big forays in the film.
Peacemaker much later. Not much later, but I know it was after Dust Till Dawn and then so-called Peacemaker. But then, so that was probably his biggest blockbuster ever.
Yeah, I would say Oceans wasn't good.
But that was 2001, though, was Oceans.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the late 90s, Jesus would have taken second billing to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
I'm not angry about it. I'm just saying Clooney must have been like, come on. Dude, what the fuck?
I'm Batman. And then there's Robin. And then, your top billing is this guy like Mr. Freeze. Like, get out of here, man. Come on. Poor George.
I love when people try and defend that film and say, it's good. Like, you have to hate watch it. No.
You have to hate watch it. No. You have to do a shot every time you just want to go, this is terrible. Oh, God. I feel better. Play. That's what you have to do. This would be empty after like the 35-minute mark of Batman and Robin. I'd rather watch Batman Forever. That is Basil Hayden's.
All right.
Whiskey. Hey, man, we're roasting a movie tonight. You can't be drinking any Jack Daniels. You got to have the stuff that Sean Connery would have drank when he was alive. Bombshell. Let's do it.
By the way, I just want to give you guys a lot of credit. Thank you for stalling enough so I could find our Ask a Gutter from 2 weeks ago.
See, we're here for, we're almost like commercials. We're just better looking than the commercial people.
Indeed. Ain't that the truth?
Here, you know, and they need makeup too. You know, they need cuddling and makeup and trailers. We're just sitting here on, you know, in our house.
Cuddling? What kind of commercials are you doing where they're cuddling?
Oh, you know, the ones where they're, holding hands in the bathtub for a Cialis commercial?
That's right. Like, hey, get out of here.
And now it's time to Ask a Gutter.
Ask a Gutter. Ask a Gutter. Ask a Gutter. Ask a Gutter.
Taco Shirt Krillin. Taco Shirt Krillin making his way up fast up the list of the Ask a Gutters. He says, this is one of those movies that I remember being damn near flawless when it was released. I can see it dragging on a second watch, maybe. My question is, what's an example of a flawless movie in your opinion?
You know, I would almost say, Kevin, are you going or is it me?
No, this is all you, Dan.
All me. Okay.
You're the gutter.
I have the ball. I'm Jordan right now. Oh, man, that's too much pressure. I would say a movie that you can rewatch at any time, any mood. It has to be a top five. It has to be rewatchable. You can't lose one beat. Like, I can watch Predator with Arnold from 84, and that movie just gives me the same kind of scares.
87.
Okay, what was in 84? That was Rocky IV. See? Almost there.
No,
that was
85. No, 85. Conan the Destroyer was 84.
Ghostbusters was 84.
But you got to think, some of those Arnold films and even like some of the Rockies, they just hold up and they stir up the same emotions. Are they scary the same way? I can watch Chef from John Favreau over and over again just because. But some films don't. And hey, that grilled cheese is worth it enough. You got to make it to that point. Then you can turn off. Get past Scarlett Johansson and the grilled cheese. Okay. But for me, a perfect film was one that has to be rewatched. And it can't have any dents. You know, I always think a great movie is kind of like a car. You buy it brand new. When you first watch it, it's going to be the best, the first drive. But if it's 10 years later and it's got too many dents, then, you know, it's kind of a shitty car.
There are some appreciated dents. You're like, hey, listen, I can understand. Like Bloodsport. Bloodsport is not a perfect film. Commando is not a perfect film. But I sure as fuck will watch them every time I stumble upon that. Yeah. Next question is from Lord Snurts, another fan favorite. Would you have taken the money if you were in a similar situation as Llewellyn Moss?
I would have thought as hard as I could to just leave it there or take a little bit of it, not make it seem like you took all the whole thing, maybe even like shove it around the area a little bit like it was a struggle, and then take like a couple good, like, what is this? A couple good high stacks of society. Rounders.
Nice.
You know, Okay, maybe like four of those and then just run away. You know, Llewellyn, run down the road to Kelly McDonald, who's dumb as you are, and just don't take all the money. I think the mistake was you took all the money.
That'd be funny if he threw it in the air like he was at a strip club and made it rain. Like,
slaughter.
Get it all now, motherfucker. I want you to go pick up all these dollars all around the desert.
Oh, man.
I would have pocketed some of that. Yeah, and by some, I mean a good amount of it. Next question. Matt Dawson at Hopper 2400. La La Land and No Country for Old Men. It's like he's targeting me specifically, and I hate it. I want to know his thoughts on Anton Chigurh, who is often said is the most realistic depiction of a psychopath on film, since you actually have to be a psychopath to dislike this film. Burn.
I would almost say, stay tuned for point number one of my gutting. And perfect. I would say, It has to do with Bardem. It has to do with that character. That's the number one problem of the movie, and that will be addressed when I get my knives out. Not yet.
Next one at Nemirovsky. Who does a psycho with a coin better? Bardem as Chigurh in The Gas Station or Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face in Batman Forever?
Well, firstly, I want to see that movie together. I want to see both those characters. And you'd have Tommy Lee Jones playing both characters, the cop and Two-Face. But for me, I think it's Anton. Because in that gas station, that's where the movie was riding as high as it could. And it was all because of the way that he described the coin toss. Even though Tommy Lee Jones does his best in that okay Batman movie. Not good, not great, not bad. Okay. See, that makes me uncomfortable too. We'll have to tackle that one later.
And of course, Bango 2331. Oh boy, I love No Country, so I'm looking forward to hearing his take on it. No questions, just general curiosity.
That's good.
All right, Kevin Israel, let's let the man do this again. Wink, wink. Let's let Dan Buffett come out and sacred cow. Oh, he jumped in on the end.
I love it.
You two had the spotlight. I had the, you two were the stars, and I'm like the and on the poster.
Nothing makes us happier when the guest jumps in from jump and gets it perfectly.
Let's just say, wink, wink, the redoing allowed me to sharpen up the gutting. Because last time was more like a, you ever go into an all-you-can-eat buffet and you eat too much, and you do too much. You do too much gutting. This time, I polished up the list. It was 8 points. Now it's about 5. Number one, it had to do with that question posed to the host of the show. It has to do with Anton, who I think is a great villain. The movie should have been all about him. I think if you were going to change the material and take Cormac McCarthy's novel and say, hey, Cormac, write him a big, fat check. I mean, a big one, shiny. Throw it to him and go, we're going to mess with your book a little bit. And we're going to take a couple dumbasses out of the screenplay. And the one thing is you give a lot of more screen time to him. Should have been best supporting actor. Should have been a best actor candidate. You need more Anton to make this movie hold up. Because upon rewatch, it's not enough Anton. There's not enough Anton shooting the dumbest Woody Harrelson U.S. Marshal ever, who just says, yeah, this guy's pretty dangerous, but I'm going to walk into his trap and get shot in the stomach in a seat and die in a hotel when nobody remembers my name. It's just those little things that don't hold up and piss me off. And Mr. Israel will, that's a deep tease. Mr. Israel's take, I think, will mirror that. Or who had some Harrelson hate among this group? Who hates the Harrelson more hate than me? That one plot point. But yeah, the biggest thing is there's not enough Anton. And number two, moving on to roast, gutting, just beating the shit out of it. Point number two is it's too long. And when you compare the first part of not having enough Anton, and I'm saving the worst thing for last, people, I haven't even gotten there yet, but it's too long. And you see that when you rewatch it. And one of the biggest things from that great question, I think the first one that was asked, that was posed to me was what makes a movie just perfect, and it can't look terrible or even not as good upon rewatch. Even 15 years later, even though it came out, did it come out in the end of the year? Of course, No Country for Old Men,
2007.
Okay, so we're almost at about a decade and a half. I would say rewatching it appeared way too long as I watched it recently, and it just to make sure I hated it, because sometimes you got to walk up to a turd and just stare at it, really stare in the ground, and go, yeah, you stink. But
how many times have you walked by a dump and go, hold on a second, guys, I got to take a whip to see how pungent this one is.
Too many Skittles. See, that's just a bad idea. And this movie is, it's just one of those shiny movies that looks good probably right when they came out. And I remember when I watched this movie in the smallest theater in St. Louis with my dad and my brother, who are about as big as me, if not bigger. And we were just shoved together in this one nucleus of human flesh watching this movie that's kind of letting us all down. But you know, when you give a movie kind of a little bit of a pass on that first watch, well, the rewatch of this movie stunk. And the biggest thing was the length. If they could have cut 20 to 25 minutes off, you're not going to give us more Anton, cut some of that other crap out. So number one, yeah, didn't have enough Anton. Number two, the length. Number three, the twist in midway. This is where the movie just careened off the road. It was going right down the middle lane to okay, maybe decent, possibly great land for a movie. And this is the Coen brothers. And in 2007, they were big players. They're like, oh, the Coen brothers got a new movie out. That's like when Tarantino had a new movie out. You're like, oh, look at you. Mr. Millionaire had time to write his script. So you have that big twist where you essentially knock out one of the characters that had this movie had posed up Llewellyn against Anton. You know, the hitman against the guy who took the money and, kind of got the attention, the job of the hitman, who is soulless, who is kind of like that, dark angel of death coming after the dumb hick who took all the money. But in this case, you knock out one of the characters. And then the last half of the movie is kind of what you would expect. He gets a little nicked. He gets hit by a car. He talks to some kids. He doesn't kill the kids. I kill Kelly McDonald. I kill, all these other people. Bombed a car, even though I slowly walked away from the car looking all mysterious and nobody looked at me. But it's just, you have that big twist that kind of upends the movie. And I think what they were thinking was, hey, the book, it worked really well. Well, on the page, it probably worked phenomenal. On the screen, it kind of, it made the film, it took that film from another level and took it down a notch. Because you took out that duel that they're planning. I mean, okay, I'm going to address a recent film that everybody was talking about, The Last Duel, and it's by Ridley. And Ridley blamed all the young people for not seeing his movie, even though nobody wants to watch a 2-hour and 30-minute movie called The Last Duel. But it delivered. The Great duel movie. Was at the duel was at the end, and it was a damn bruiser. He had Jason Bourne against the guy without the lightsabers this time. Adam Driver. It was brutal. It met the hype. In this movie, you knock that out at the halfway point. And like we all know, Tommy Lee Jones' character was all right, but he's just like that guy who's at the bar. Yeah, it's his No Country for Old Men. That's what the movie's about, by the way. And now the movie's over. Now you're disappointed. Go get more popcorn. Okay, I'm going to scan a list for further gutting. So stand by. We've already had how many? What, 4 points? Let's not overgut it, because you two still have to, throw your punches in there. Tom Bell, kind of the slowest guy in the movie, trying to explain the whole movie's title, even though I think it's No Country for Young Men. Look at all the young guys that die in the movie. Woody was relatively young. Josh Brolin was before he tried to take out half the universe. He was young. You have Kelly McDonald. She was young. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones lives. He's older. So it's No Country for Young Men. See, you could have changed the title again. That's another one. And by the way, let's go another plot point before I just sit down and let you guys talk, because you sound better than I do. Kelly McDonald, in the end, denies the coin toss. I would always, if you have a guy who looks like that, he hasn't been to Sports Clips in about 15, 20 years. Sports you have a guy clips. Sitting there like this with a cattle gun just going, I am soulless and I am Bane's cousin. I'm kidding. And then he's going to shoot you. I would go for the coin toss, try to bargain for your life. Maybe you find some of the money. Maybe you marry a not so idiotic guy named Llewellyn. Don't marry a Brolin. So really, upon rewatching, that's an error point. Too faithful to the source material. And I think someone else nailed that point in the ground. And I think he's a better looking guy with a beard on his screen who's going to talk soon. I think it should have, deviated from the source material. I think it should have taken Cormac McCarthy's book. You start the chili, you throw the meat and the onions in, and you start throwing all your own little crazy shit in there. You start kitchen sinking it. And I think the Coen brothers should have kitchen sink No Country for Old Men. Thus, they made a movie that is not terrible. I mean, you can't watch this movie and call it bad. I mean, and I tried. I wanted to. I had the knife out. I was like, psycho, first 15 minutes. And then I didn't. It was underwhelming. It was overrated, highly overrated. So, yeah, No Country for Old Men, upon rewatch, is not not worthy of all that. Oh, it's so good. I wouldn't agree with all the fancy critics. And me.
Give me a number, Dan.
I think it's stiff. Out of 10?
Yeah.
Okay, out of 10. What do they say? Let's do a new number. Let's do 6.2. 6.2.
Wow.
Is that too low? Is that too high?
For a movie specific. You hate.
Yes.
I don't know, because I think for me, upon rewatch, Anton kept it from being like a lower than a 6. I think I was around a 6, maybe at a 5.5. But I think after ruminating, and that's what I do when I get a chance to think more about things that I probably shouldn't have. It's a 6.1, 6.2, It's like,
blame us for this.
It was kind of like, it was, I tell you what, I could bring it back. Hold on. I could bring it back to a 6. Okay. Knock it down six, on the ground. Six.
All you have to six say, is yeah. You say it's overrated, is what it sounds like. You don't have to bury it. Yeah, that's fine.
Listen, yeah. I mean, let's just show about 8 feet on there, not 6 feet. Let's show about 8 feet, but let's not just kill it. Let's put a little water bottle down there. Clean up,
Kevin Israel. What do you think, Kevin Israel? Why don't you hit your notes up?
Hold on 1 sec.
No, he's getting his notes. That picture behind you is still freaking me out. Whenever I look at you, I look at him and I go, Javier? No, it's me.
sorry, I just needed my Wi-Fi is shitty. Okay. So this is one of those movies where I could see one of Kevin Gauthier's favorite 5-star ratings reading like this, reviews reading like this. In a world that has moved on, Ed Tom Bell was the last of a dying breed, a lawman of a bygone era. Set in his ways and unequipped for the brutal realities of crime in the 80s, Ed faces the challenge of a psychopathic hitman whose determined and unyielding violence mirrors the harshness and inevitability of time. While the new brutal country has room for villains, it has no country for old men.
Yuck.
That's what you said last time.
And the performance matches.
Yeah.
But for me, this movie, I haven't seen this movie since I saw it in the theater. And it was never a movie that I was like, oh, you know what? I should watch that again. There was no, and to Dan's point earlier on, if the measure of a great movie is rewatchability, this movie is not a great movie because it's not very rewatchable. And I realize there are, before people on Twitter freak out, I realize there are great movies out there that aren't incredibly rewatchable, but I think that's the exception and not the rule. I think when you look at great movie, Shawshank Redemption, for example, you watch that movie from any scene at any point in the movie and enjoy it. You know, we talk about it all the time, the remote test. And this movie definitely isn't that. This movie feels like a short story where, and I know it was based off of a novel, and I have no idea what the novel was like, but the movie feels like a short story where a guy had an idea, like, we're going to have this old, grizzled lawman who just falls behind the times, and there's going to be this psychopathic killer, and he's going to prove to the old lawman that his time's just passed. And like, that was the whole idea. And then the producers were like, all right, that sounds cool, but now you have to make a movie around that. And the writer was like, ah, shit. Okay. Well, here's some other stuff we're going to do. And all the other stuff is interesting, sort of, but the whole movie feels, it doesn't feel like it all fits together. Like Josh Brolin's character, I don't know if he's an idiot or if he's sort of a genius, but because he does some things where it's like taking all the money, for example. Like if you had, he was in no rush to take that money because everybody was dead. He could have thought about it for a sec. And he should have done exactly what Dan said. Scatter some around, make it look like there was a fight, and take a few bucks, and then walk away. I tried saying it earlier. There's a great saying in finance. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. And he was a hog about this. If he just took, what was it? It was a couple $1 million, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of money. It was a decent hunk of change.
If he took, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 and just scattered the rest around, who's going to sit and count all the money? They would have been like, oh, there's a fight. The thing blew up. Whatever. Move on. But then he goes back to give the guy water. Like, that was crazy. That scene was crazy to me. There was nothing in his personality that suggests that he would have been the kind of guy to do that. But he had to do that just to make the whole plot move forward. Like, that was purely a plot device of him they should have done it. They should have done it somehow a different way because it just didn't feel natural to who that character was. And to be honest, we don't even get to know him very well. Woody Harrelson's character was really interesting when he's introduced. He seems like this, like badass, you know, kind of dark operative, black ops guy.
Know it all.
Yeah. And he was like, I can get him. And but, you know, like, you're like, oh, this guy is going to like, it's going to be Javier Bardem versus Woody Harrelson. And there's going to be like this great moment. And because Woody Harrelson is a badass. And no, he ends up begging for his life and kind of crying in a motel. And like, that's all you get out of him. Almost served absolutely no purpose other than to tell Josh Brolin that a badass is coming for you. Like you're in a bad situation. That whole buildup for that character with his whole exchange with the drug lord or whatever that guy was, served absolutely no purpose. The movie does have some great scenes though. And most of of them are Javier Bardem. The scene with the clerk is amazing. The tension that's built up in that scene, it rivals Inglourious Basterds opening scene, where it's just brutal to watch because you just know something bad is going to happen. And oddly enough, in this one, it doesn't pan out. Which that scene, it kind of encapsulates this whole movie. Like it builds up, and then it's like edging. And if you don't know what edging is, look it up. But that's exactly what it likes, and I see it. That's what exactly what it's like. Like, Goatee is like, I have that saved on my Huges account. But it that's really what it does. They set up so many great moments and so many great, and Dan was right. You know, Josh Brolin gets killed. You don't even get to see that. Like everything, the movie that's interesting that's supposed to happen in the movie, you don't get to see, and it never pans out. And then it just ends on this really weird philosophical moment, which it didn't feel like the movie was building up to that. Tommy Lee Jones gives this weird, first he goes to see his uncle, I think. And they have this whole exchange about how times changed and whatever. And then he has a conversation with his wife about this dream that has, you know, he had two dreams with his dad, and each of those dreams obviously had different meanings. And it was one of those times where I was listening to that and I was like, I'm not smart enough to know what they're talking about, but I know there's meaning behind this. And there was, because I had to look it up. And then I was like, oh, well, that's all right. So like one of the stories was basically that like it was just life passing him by and he couldn't keep up with it. And another was his dad saying, well, you got to come with me now because we've got to move on together. And that was like the whole meaning of the movie. Basically, Tommy Lee Jones, who was in the movie for all of 18 minutes, maybe, was past his prime. The time has passed and, you know, it's moved on to a much more violent time and he can't keep up. And that was the whole point of this movie, which I guess would have been great in a different movie. But in this movie, they set up all this cool shit that you never got to do anything with. There was so much that could have happened and it never does. And the scariest thing in this movie is a Javier Bardem's haircut. Like that's the worst thing you get out of this. Like that and the cattle bolt, that cattle bolt machine that kills people. That was genius. Coming up with that way to kill people was, and that he breaks open door, like that was like the Inspector Gadget tool. Like it did everything. And there were like really cool moments in this movie, and there were some really great scenes. But then it just didn't pan out. And then the end with the kids, and you know, he crashes his car, he's falling apart, and then he just walks away. And you'd have no idea what happens to him. And that felt like a bit of a letdown too, because I guess he's just supposed to be like a force of nature that like he's just going to keep on going. Like there's nothing's going to stop him. And he finished with these guys and now he's going to move on to murder somebody else with some weird you appliance that nobody ever thought of that could kill somebody. But I don't know. This was a weird one for me because I didn't hate watching it, but I didn't particularly enjoy it, and I'm definitely never going to watch it again. And I would have watched it again, but for our buddy Dan picking it. So for me, this movie, and I feel like I keep going with the score, but it's a five.
I was going to say five. I knew you were going to do it. You're doing this too long, my friend, too long. Before we get to these notes, let's talk about our brand new sponsor, Kevin. That, of course, Athletic Greens. I take mine every morning. You take yours every morning. The best thing about it, of course, the taste. Oh, it doesn't taste bad. You're sitting there going, oh, another protein or another nutrition, you know, mixed concoction. It does not taste like you'd think at all. It is a good taste. Kevin, what are your thoughts on how it tastes and how it affects your daily routines?
Yeah, it's not bad. You know what? And I'm not going to lie. Look, it's green. So the minute you're going to go drink something green, you're like, I don't know about this. But it's smooth. It doesn't have that chalky taste. It tastes healthy. It tastes like a healthy drink. That's not horrible. It's a great way to start the day. Mix it with some cold water, knock it down, and it helps. I substitute it for my coffee in the morning. I feel alert, ready to go. My brain's working. The gut is healthy. It's a great, great supplement. And I've tried a lot of supplements, so I can really say that this one helps.
Yeah, it cleans up the system nicely, keeps things moving. Don't worry, you're not going to poop green. You know, that's unless you're looking to do that on St. Patrick's Day for a goof. And then Dan will come over and smell it.
just to make sure how really how bad it is.
And you are absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, Whole food sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. Guess what? Lifestyle friendly, meaning if you're keto, paleo, vegan, dairy free, gluten free, no problems for kids, Hakuna Matata. It also contains less than 1 gram of sugar. And more importantly, you think this is going to cost an arm and a leg? It's not, because the story of this, of Athletic Greens, the founder was trying to do a bunch of gut health, you know, experiments. He had a crazy supplement routine where it cost him $100 a day. Dan, what do you think Athletic Greens costs a day to have?
Let's say $1, $1.50.
Well, it's less than $3 a day, so we'll call that a win. It's definitely cheaper than Starbucks. It's definitely cheaper than crack. Either way, you're getting healthier with Athletic Greens. It has over 7,000 five-star reviews and trusted by leading health experts like Tim Ferriss and Michael Gervais. And as a little gift to our listeners, when you go to athleticgreens.com/GTSC, you order, guess what? They're going to throw you 1 year supply free of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. athleticgreens.com/GTSC, as in obviously gutting the sacred cow. athleticgreens.com/GTSC notes. I haven't seen this movie in a while. I did see it in the theater. I think I saw it again on cable after that. So this is a pretty fair number, I think. Let's set the over-under of number of times someone spits tobacco, because this deals with in Texas. I set the number at 27 and a half. Hey, Tommy Lee Jones, turn down the Texas accent just a little bit. Any more twang and I'm in danger of going to a Brooks and Dunn concert. Hard pass, folks. Hard pass. Javier Bardem, you guys said it, has the haircut my Fisher-Price figurines had in the late 70s, early 80s. When Javier Bardem is choking out the deputy, the face he makes while doing so must be the same face that he makes when Penelope Cruz is giving him a blowjob.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine looking down and having that, like, oh, God damn it, I made it.
Only Arnold Schwarzenegger, after having sex with Kelly Preston and twins, the look on his face has to be number two after Javier's face choking out that poor cop.
And then Arnold goes home and fucks his maid. Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Strike out.
The maid looks like the picture of Dan behind Kevin Israel, I think.
Hey, Dan's a pretty man with that haircut. I'm not going to lie.
I think Schwarzenegger's mate has more facial hair than that photo. Next. Amazing how Josh Brolin goes from douchebag killjoy older brother in Goonies to this, to Cable, to Thanos. All while his dad is busy banging Kevin Israel's favorite singer, Barbara Streisand. I love how Mexican drug lords dress like Italian grandmother's couches in every film I see them in. The only thing missing is a big, big piece of plastic. You know, when I wake up in the middle of the night, the last thing in my head is to go drive to the middle of nowhere. The first thing on my mind is, how can I piss with a morning boner in the shower without waking my wife up and yelling at me for doing so? Why would Kelly McDonald's character marry a guy named Llewellyn? Can you imagine someone yelling out that name in the throes of passion? That has the same vaginal drying effect, like, fuck me, Leon. Give me that cock, Saul. Put in my ass, Sylvester. By the way, Kelly McDonald, young version of, she was in Trainspotting. She was the gal in Trainspotting, if you remember that film.
Wow. I early, it. Early, mm-hmm. early career.
I love
Ewan McGregor, right? Wasn't that one of his first big movies, Ewan's?
That and Shallow Grave was before that. You ever see that?
Shallow Grave, yeah.
I paid to see it in the theater. You know why I paid to see it in the theater? Because the goddamn tagline critic wrote, just as good as Pulp Fiction. And as a young, dumb asshole, I think it was like 18 when it came out, I saw it. I go, it's nothing like Pulp Fiction.
Nothing like Pulp Fiction. That was a nice little clickbait.
They got me good. This movie, as Israel said, is a masterclass in building suspense and tension. I implore you to find one that's better than this. This is top five for sure, i.e. the scene with the clerk for sure, as well as a little bit with Dan's favorite character, Woody Harrelson. Once he finds a transmitter and the money, why not flush that fucker down the toilet? Or at least put it in a candy bar and throw it to a rat like Schwarzenegger did in Total Recall.
Watch some movies, Llewellyn.
I'm a Johnny Cab. God damn, that film is still great. It's on cable now nonstop and I get sucked in. Hey man, I got five kids to feed. When Josh Brolin calls Woody Harrelson's room right before he was about to get shot, obviously this takes place in the late 70s. No answering machines, no voicemail. What maniac stays on the phone for more than five rings? He stayed on that line for at least 10 rings. That's beyond psychopathic. What asshole has the time for 10 rings? That doesn't happen. Did you know Woody Harrelson's dad was a hitman for the mob? He killed a federal judge and in his last few days alive on death row inferred that he was indeed part of the JFK plot. Although Mike Price, our buddy, would vehemently disagree with that point, I'm sure.
Oh, indeed.
Llewellyn's wife seems completely helpless, except in the end when she tries to rationalize with Shagur and takes a stand by probably not accepting the coin flip's results. I feel mildly cheated that we did not get to see the confrontation between Llewellyn and the Mexican gang, as well as the wife. I want to see her dig more into it about not accepting the coin flip instead of just, that's fine. I get a little bit of mystery could do it, but I want a little closure for that.
We all agree that the wife got killed, though.
I think for the most part, he killed her. I mean,
Did he check his feet out as he walked out, like as he stepped in blood, kind of thing? Is that
That's why.
I'll assume so. Yeah. Okay. All right. We're all in agreement, son. Quite the interesting ending with leaving some unanswered questions, and it works. It works for me. I saw this in the theater. I liked it. I watched it a few years ago again. I liked it. This time, I like it too. Do I own it? No. Does it pass the remote test? No, it does not. Except when Shagur is in the gas station with the clerk. This is one that you have to be in from start from finish. You can't just jump in anywhere. Very much like Hateful Eight. You just can't jump in anywhere and go, all right, I'm cool. This is not on the frequent rewatch list, but I like it. It's good. It's maybe a smidge above fine. But I'm not going to die on the hill and defend this. Six and a half out of 10 is my number. I like it. And again, Dan made the point. If Anton Shigur is not as good of a character as he is, this is not a 6.5 out of 10.
this is so good.
I'm going to call this the Darth Vader villain bonus points, where you're that fucking good. And you get not saying that the original Star Wars are obviously insane and cinematic masterpieces. But Darth Vader takes him to the next level, as does the Emperor. Same thing with this film is my point.
It's like double points. Like when he's on screen, it just the whole thing gets so much better.
Well, we just did Jaws recently, and Kevin Israel and I both were saying how Quint. I mean, we both said the film is fucking perfect, but Quint is amazing. There's got to be one of the top 10 characters in film of all time. He's so memorable and great. Anton Shigur, same thing. Again, the weapon choice, same exact reason. Who the fuck would think of doing a cattle gun to do that? And my interpretation of the end is death cannot be stopped, Tommy Lee. That's what it is. Shigur is death. He is the T-1000. He is the T-800 in Terminator. He does not stop until you are dead. Critics, 5-star reviews.
5-star reviews. Five-star reviews by critics.
The greatest films are such a force of life and death, love and hate, that once the closing credits begin to roll, the film's cinematic life has just begun. Ugh. This reviewer definitely French kissed their English lit notebook in college. Yeah.
Saved up all the big words.
The Coen brothers honor McCarthy by reproducing whole chunks of dialogue from the book and judiciously trimming plot. Jones's plaintive mourning for a country that's become too complicated to police is enough for us to know why he's packing it in. That's an interesting comparison, especially with today's societal thoughts on policing in, again, current times.
Yep.
With very little dialogue, Bardem is an imposing evil presence who makes every scene he is in a white knuckle moment. We all agree on that.
Absolutely.
It is a smart film and pure Coen. It has a point, though some may contest it, but it's not a must-see film for everyone. So if you are a Coen fan, don't take your grandmother. She will say it sucks. I don't take my grandmother to movies because, guys, she does not appreciate the dick and the popcorn trick as much as your mom does. Ha! Waka, waka, waka. By the way, Coen brothers, where are we on them? I only like Fargo and I like this, and they can go kick fucking rocks after that. I did not see Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I won't. I hated Raising Arizona with a passion, but I like True Grit. So I didn't see their real like Blood Simple. I have not seen yet, but I haven't seen a lot of the musical ones that they've done. The Netflix one.
For me, Miller's Crossing is still my favorite one. That's the Gabriel Byrne one from the '80s. Just didn't like it. Fargo is great.
Yeah.
I like, it's just, come on. The Big Lebowski is just kind of an otherworldly kind of funny movie. I don't love it as much as everybody else, but I do think Bridges and Goodman kind of elevate it. But I mean, I've never been in love with, again, Miller's Crossing. I watched it with my dad when I was a kid. I watched it. And again, that for me, it holds up, but I loved it in the beginning. Outside of that and Fargo, which I just think is a perfect thriller, I think Fargo was what No Country for Old Men aspired to be. Right. And I think that Fargo nailed it. But as far as loving their movies, I've always kind of thought, man, they could be better writers than directors or vice versa. Rarely have they hit it out of the park for me. So I'm kind of like, I'm with you, Mr. Goatee.
Okay.
I was looking at their list of movies to remember what I've seen. Did either of you see The Ballad of Buster Scruggs?
No chance.
I didn't like it.
I was so angry at the end of it.
What is going on? Like, what is... I watched all of that for this. It's like they were punking us.
Yeah. And if you watch the trailer made the movie out to be a completely different movie than what it was.
It was so bad.
But also, interesting fact... They also did the movie Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oscar Isaac.
Apparently, they like that name.
Yeah, I mean, and that movie had promise. The first half was all right. The second half just got so depressing. I just wanted to beat all the characters up. I wanted to beat up Oscar Isaac. I wanted to punch Carey Mulligan in the face. She was mean to him. And I just wanted to leave the movie. But they can never really make a whole movie. They're always really good. I always think they'd be a great TV show, maybe, because they nail an hour, but they never really stick the land. Again, man, I think great movies, they just stick that landing. It's like whenever I watch my favorite movie of all time, Heat, whenever I watch The Shootout and De Niro and Pacino, it never loses steam. But No Country, and as you just said, Kevin, earlier, man, a lot of her movies just kind of...
Yep.
Yeah, I hate Lebowski. We did on this podcast, and I was joyous that Ron Barba, my buddy, actually decided to take that film on. I think it's so overrated, and I fucking hate it. Blah, blah, blah. Critics, one-star reviews.
You know you make me wanna...
Critics, one-star reviews. Critics, one-star reviews. And critics, one-star reviews. Critics, one-star reviews.
An exasperating and self-defeating experience, rather like listening to a nymphomaniac extol the virtues of celibacy. Now, I think inviting this reviewer, guys, out for a night of drinks sounds like a self-defeating experience, especially when they start talking to a group of women you're interested in, because nothing dries up vaginas more than a man who wears a bow tie and then has his glasses pushed down to the bottom part of his nose.
Oh, man. Just say the movie sucked, man. Don't get so damn detailed. You know, just say it's like Taco Bell at 2:30. It's never a good idea, but you do it sometimes.
Oscar Wilde just woke up from his grave and said, "Shut the fuck up, pussies." Okay. Morose vagueness will get No Country for Old Men called a classic instead of what it is, an often effective but pompous grindhouser. Its pretensions are so big, you couldn't fit them in Texas. You know, it's not vague how colossal of a douche this reviewer is. Another one. Sure. If I want wry lawmen and smart calculating fugitives, I'll get them from Elmore Leonard. And if I want Leonard, I'll take him neat rather than slow filter drop by drop through a layer of Faulkner, then laced with the Book of Jeremiah. And here's me trying to let everyone know that I read books that you're supposed to admit to reading. Unless otherwise, then I'll call you uneducated. And by the way, the best 50 Shades of book, gray book, was the first. I'm just kidding. Book of Jeremiah, are you guys familiar with that one? Or are we just going to nod our head and pretend to nod? Okay, good. No
idea. I'm just going to be like, you're trying to sound kind of important, Mr. Reviewer, aren't you?
Yeah.
The Book of Jeremiah said that no country. All right.
Don't believe the hype. The most unsatisfying conclusion to a film since the final episode of The Sopranos, and that which led up to it wasn't so great either.
An interesting way to go after The Sopranos.
It's kind of a nice little a hockey thing where they just kind of shove them into the boards or by. Like, all right, whoa.
Yeah. Amazon 5-star reviews.
Amazon 5-star reviews. Amazon 5-star reviews. Amazon 5-star reviews. Gutting power.
I am from Texas, and because the film takes place entirely in Texas, this film has a warming feel to it, much like biscuits and gravy by a fireplace. The retro 70 feel, while taking on a classic Western style, works perfectly. It is not a beaten to death Western like Gunsmoke or Bonanza, although I love me a good classic Western, but it captures the theme and idea of a Western. This movie, I'll pause. Okay, good. This movie is about an assassin who drives with his hands at 10 and 2 on the wheel.
It got to be like this with his gun, his little cattle gun. Hey, you know, he'd just be sitting back having an iced tea, like, hey man, I'm in between.
Not
kills.
Laid back enough
because I'm rolling to my 6'4", dude, and let me ride.
Oh, but instead, he's like this. He's like
that. Just happened.
Yeah, I enjoyed this movie and really wanted to watch it. There are some scenes that are too violent for me, and I closed my eyes and covered my ears during most of these scenes. The movie is very good and has very good performances from the main stars, and I don't think I'll watch it again because of the too violent scenes. But I'm glad I found it at Amazon for a good price. Signed, Jason Momoa. Yeah, big fan.
Really?
No. You heard it, single ladies. Go for it, Miss Omaha.
Shoot your shot.
Javier Bardem plays bone-chilling psychopath Anton Chigurh. Tom Hanks, Forrest Gump castaway, plays Ed Tom Bell. And Brosh Jolin, the unethical thief of $2 million, Louis Moss, Mexican, in this suit impressed me with his 20s of screen time performance. Great. Buy just off that. Would buy again, smiley face.
Tom
whatever, just whatever he's smoking, I just want a couple puffs. I don't need six. I just need a couple.
I want to see that movie. I want to watch the movie he watched.
Where's the screenplay?
I call this movie Mad Libs.
Yeah.
Here is a great film. The end would not have been permitted 75 years ago. There were certain restrictions on theme then, and the ending would have likely had to have been revised. Okay. Not depressing at all, but the satirical cartoon-like violence manages to become comical. Think Tom and Jerry, but with real people. Signed, Ernest Hemingway.
Whoa, hey, that's a little just like Tom and Jerry. Ernest.
Yeah.
Just like Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry, one of the worst cartoons of our childhood. I'm putting it right out there. It's so
bad. It was
bad.
Just weak. It was
I
weak.
Hated it.
I did too. And when they had the movie come out, I go, nope.
No, sorry. Yeah. Did sorry, not kids. Watch it.
Looney Tunes, no Ride or Die.
I saw it.
You did. You did it for us, Kevin Israel. You did it for us.
It was as bad and worse than you think.
But why watch it in the first place when you know it? If you didn't like the cartoon from Jump, then why would you watch it as an adult?
I think we watched it in like the later months of the pandemic when like we just run out of things to watch, and that was a newer movie that we hadn't seen. And okay, I want to say. Yeah. that it got really, really good, surprisingly good reviews.
Yeah. Okay, Kevin Israel, I have a question. You watch that movie in slow motion, or Anton tells you to call it?
Call it.
Oh, that's how bad
I have a chance not to suffer with the with the coin flip.
Yeah, but you have a son now. You have to think of him.
Yeah, that's true. He'd want me to call it.
Yeah. Tell you what, mommy, call it.
Oh, careful.
Amazon one-star reviews.
Amazon one-star reviews. Amazon one-star reviews. Amazon one-star reviews now. Amazon one-star reviews. Amazon one-star reviews. Amazon one-star reviews now. Amazon one-star reviews. One-star review. One-star review. One-star, one-star reviews.
Gruesome, gratuitous violence, a movie that could only be enjoyed by perverted adolescent boys. Please do not encourage this kind of aimless, immoral movie making by watching this movie. Signed, Marilyn Manson.
All right. Let's cut that out. There's nothing wrong with the violence in the movie. We want brutality.
Speaking of brutality, I just read a few minutes ago, Mortal Kombat 2 has been greenlit.
Look, you know, I didn't hate last year's movie, but I didn't hate it either. I don't need, but why do we have to do two?
Because they did leave it open for a sequel. And fuck, I will see. I like the first one.
I'll see it.
Hated it.
Because they didn't have the theme in it. I know that was missing. Okay. But otherwise, the fatalities were great. The story was good enough. Okay.
It was good enough. The story.
Thank God I paid only $3 for it, but I still want that money back. I could buy something better quality, like Kirkland toilet paper. I keep hearing people describing it as dark and disturbing. No, 7 was dark and disturbing. This one was slow and boring. Can someone explain to me what Kirkland toilet paper is? I'm sorry, I must be too rich because I can afford name brand double ply.
Let's show off.
Yeah. I think it's what you kind of, you bypass that in the aisle usually. You go, okay, this one time, come on.
Yeah. It's almost like that one person's house you're going to that you know they have single. You're like, can I bring like a small pack of butt wipes in my back pocket? Because I know it's going to give you it's, whatever.
Great. Who knows? Hand sanitizer. Don't worry about it, guys.
You know what? Fuck it. It's on them. Use their towel. That'll learn them.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Great scenes that, when combined, make no sense whatsoever. Poor storytelling. The fact that people think this movie is so artful and deep makes me hate it even more. Last one. Woodlawn, We Are Marshall. And now this one. No damn words. I completely give up. Thanks, but no thanks, Amazon. You truly are a piece of work. Signed, the Kenzie Bezos.
Oh, hey, don't let me mess with Matthew McConaughey's performance in We Are Marshall. That's a crowd pleaser.
Not a bad film. I think he's more upset about Amazon and their lack of quality service. Kevin Israel, did Dan Buffa come back and gut this sacred cow?
I don't know. His arguments led me to say yes, but then he gave it a 6.5. How does it gut? 6.2,
I
think.
Well, the thing is, I don't even remember what I gave Lala, so I will say that my idea of a bad rating is maybe a little more generous. I'm the guy that tips okay waiters, even though they don't really buy a deserved tip. All right. I'm too nice of a guy sometimes, but so maybe my 6 is a little bit too high, but I don't want to watch this movie ever again. So I do have that.
I'm going to offer this rare opinion because I'm torn about this. I'm going to say that we gutted this cow as a Voltron. We joined together and we gut this.
Yeah, I almost think all of our guttings combined, I think people would just avoid this movie altogether.
Dan reminds me that, you know, that typical Midwest niceness. It's like a girl gives like a less than, you know, like a D plus BJ. You're like, but you tried.
All right, do you have stats? What was my rating of La La Land? Do you have that right in front of you? Do you know I gave it?
Not handy. No, I don't recall.
Well, can I change my rating? Because I think I was a little too generous.
Well, I'm not going to fucking re-edit the show, Dan, so no.
Okay, let's just do a 4.9. Okay? And that's only because of Anton. If you take him out, I don't even want to know what I give it. That's how, that's the thing. You take out Anton, you should have been the star of the movie in the first place. But
yeah. Dan Buffo, what are you up to? Tell the good folks where we can find you and what's new.
At Buff82 on Twitter, that's where all the links go, and that's where all the random thoughts write. Randomly got a movie on 11 p.m. at night. That's where to go. KSTK has all the new reviews. Occasionally, STL Jewish Light, but mostly just on Twitter, pissing people off every day.
Kevin Israel, how about yourself?
KevinIsrael.com for upcoming comedy dates and whatnot. And more importantly, leave us a 5-star rating and a quick few sentence review because we need it. We love it. We want you to interact with us and we recognize your great reviews. KG does it, you know, a couple times a week. He calls out the people who leave the best reviews, like saying we mispronounce words, even though we don't. You're a moron, but we still love you because you gave us a good rating. So yeah, find your podcast platform of choice and leave us a rating and a quick review.
Dan, how do you pronounce the word zeitgeist?
Zeitgeist.
Okay, thank you. We're right.
We're just right. That's going to be the question we ask at the end of every show.
Yeah, everything. It's like, what's your favorite color? Why do you say that? I kind of like it. It's different. That's the first time I've been asked that. Changing it up. One more reason, people, to follow the podcast. Give it 5 stars. Don't do it and be the guy who gives a 4-star rating to a very good podcast.
We've had that.
5. Don't be a dick. Anybody watching this?
The most recent 4-star rating because they didn't like one of our guests.
Sorry.
No, it wasn't you. It was, and they specified the guest too. So don't worry, it wasn't.
Oh, you. Well, you know, tell them, hey, they still got 2 Kevins. God damn it, that's 5 right there.
Speaking of Kevin, KevinGoatee.com for dates and whatever NFL picks. Most importantly, follow us on all the socials, GTSC Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Twitter is GTSC Podcast. That's Twitter, GTSC Podcast. At guttingthesacredcow.com every day where you find blog articles or that doesn't happen, movie news like Mortal Kombat 2 coming out. Ha ha. And of course, do not forget merch shop. Kevin Israel's got the coffee mug on full display right there for your drinking pleasures. To drink your athleticgreens.com/GTSC good products. That's amazing. And last and not least, if you want to advertise with us like Athletic Greens, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. Guys, Dan, yay, listen, fantastic job again, sir. We appreciate it. And thanks for coming back. And we'll see all you crazy kids next week. Aloha.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.